What is the future for cities?
Do you want to learn more about them?
Do you want to know how others think about them?
Do you want to be part of the conversation?
Then this is the right place.
Welcome to What is the Future for Cities podcast. Today, I will interview Johan Thiessen, the director of Hemblock Australia. We will talk about his vision for the future of cities, the city itself, urban re-evaluation, and many more. So let's start with a proper introduction. Originating from Holland, multilingual Johan Thiessen is a key figure in the development of the hemp building industry in Australia. He has developed certification, manuals, and training programs to meet the growing interest and demand for hemp as a sustainable building material. Johan is passionate about protecting the planet for future generations and minimizing the impact of traditional materials used throughout the construction industry. Johan equally focuses on smooth, fast, and simple building processes using longer-lasting and efficient materials. And with that, Johan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time and appearing on the podcast. What does the future of cities mean to you?
To be honest, the first thing that the future of cities gives me is a repellent feeling. I wouldn't say fear, but it's something, like you say, war. It's not nice, you know. So to me, the city is not an attractive word. And then the future of cities, because of technology and people implementing technology and the denseness of technology, cities, I don't think they're super healthy. So you get this feeling, the future of cities, eventually it will be fine. So I'm talking about a more philosophical kind of approach. Eventually it will be fine, but we might just overdo it with the cities. And that might not be that beneficial for everyone.
Okay, then let's step back a little bit. What does the city mean to you?
Well, the city is kind of a dense place where lots of things happen. I am originally from Holland, and to us, the city is generally where you go and do things that you cannot do in your village or smaller or bigger villages, and where exceptional things happen because of the amount of people that are there. Like a museum, they can afford to put, you know, expensive things in there, extraordinary things, or concerts, because of the amount of people that will visit and stream through and so on. So the city culturally is okay. It's exciting also to see how other people live. And I've lived in various cities like KL, Amsterdam, and then the first ones, Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, and so on. Just like a lot of people traveling in big cities like Bombay and Dubai and, you know, name it. Often the city for me is an excitement at the moment, and where you can get stuff and where you can see stuff, big museums, big buildings, and multicultural experience.
When does this excitement turn into fear?
For the future, yes. So one time I remember I had a meeting and we had to stay over somewhere nearby in the city. This was Brisbane and it was cool. So I stayed over in an Airbnb, and when I woke up, I looked out at the window and I realized, oh, okay. And right in front of me, I was at the fifth or sixth floor. There was a tower of towers with, you know, internet, and it was a phone tower. There was long microphone-like things around a post beaming at me from about 20 meters. And I thought, okay, I see. I probably have good Wi-Fi reception here, but what else do I get? So the fear is made a little bit the technology, where you can then say, like, this is conspiracy, which is kind of a silly word. But there's knowledge out there about things that are used in cities to actually mold people's minds and influence them. And stuff like that, it's like, that doesn't really attract me. And then the other thing is the denseness, and there's nowhere to go. If there's a big fire, then everyone should leave. Cities are a bit claustrophobic sometimes, depends on the layout.
Did you have this kind of feeling of fear and too much technology and too much denseness in all cities you visited and you lived?
No. In other cities, it's looking back at it. It is more that you think, do we really have to be there? Do we all really have to be that dense? Lahore is a big city, Lahore, Pakistan. And then you see all these layers of poverty and not poverty, all the extreme big mansions and expensive cars and bodyguards. And I don't know, like, then you think the people that then suffer in that case, do they really have to be there? Why don't they go and be in the village? And the funny thing is that the city attracts people and then kind of creates this kind of imbalance because the countryside ends up not offering what it used to offer. So there's changes. And I think globally, if there could be a stimulus to stimulate country life and put money, wisdom, knowledge, technology, as in agricultural technology, how to keep water where it is, how to get water where we need water. There's so many techniques out there. Why don't we do that? There must be a reason for that. People maybe want to have people all in the city, so they can actually manipulate everything.
Did this kind of density change, or has this kind of density changed during COVID, in your opinion?
I don't know. See, I haven't been around much in cities during COVID, but what apparently is happening in Shanghai is really gives me this very pressed feeling on my chest. Like, that's what they can do in the city. They just say, stay in. If not, you basically get shot. In a mild way, they don't really say that, but we get taken or fined or whatever. And we choose to live in a city. There you go. That's what can then happen. And if you're not listening, then we just turn the power off. I don't know. So the COVID thing, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people have flown into particular beliefs that in the end don't really benefit them. They're actually more destructive.
So the COVID situation, in your opinion, didn't really help because it created more different fears.
It showed how easy it is to manipulate people into believing something. Let's talk about the better city, the nicer city. Let's try to find examples of cities that really function well, where people are happy and they're not troubled and the suicide rate is down and the cancer rate is down. The air pollution is down. Let's have a look at where they are. And I'm sure that there will be cities out there. And my mind goes towards Norway, Sweden, Denmark, perhaps. I don't have a lot of knowledge about cities, but it's just what I kind of pick up. I read bits and pieces. But I've had various deeper conversations with professionals that have been, that are working or have been working on creating new hubs, and they're not necessarily calling it a city. They're the ones, these people have been studying of all towns and cities, which ones function the best and what is the best size of a city, for example. I remember a conversation with a master planner slash builder slash developer that is very interested in my product. Yeah, they said, well, there's a size for a city because when it's over, then there's too many people doing this, too many people doing that, and therefore you've got competition. The balance is not there. So there's other ways to create these hubs where people can live and be sustainable. And then that could bring the city to another optional use, like you have a home, but you can make it a hotel, or you can make it a prison. So it's the same home, you know. So the hotel is sometimes used by different people, prisoners, people stuck there, or a home is where people live and that has its own thing. So for me, if I look into the future or wish the future to be a certain way, I think the countryside would be the strong hub, and the city will be a place, lots of things are dense, but people don't necessarily live there for long. They come and go and they use the city as what it is, or people that really want to live there do live there, but they have enough room, space, and health to be there. There's all these definitions that we're talking about because at the same time, we're talking about a canvas kind of a situation, but there's not much good canvas out there. There's good canvas and then there's less good canvas. With that, I mean the geographical position, because here we have border, which is the ocean. We could actually go into the ocean. There's people that live on oceans and islands, but some people have more mountains or, sorry, countries. The hub needs to be in harmonic way, so it's perfect for where it is. And then the next hub is perfect for where it is. And in between, there's plenty of green to grow things and food and materials. And that's where we can come to things like hemp, because as you know, I work with hemp. I've been working with hemp for a long time. Hemp is a plant, and it's a very old plant, a very useful plant. It's like a small, dense tree that grows way faster and has more uses than trees actually do. So then things like hemp can be grown there, and then if you then do calculations, you'll work out, we've got all this space. We just have to make sure that we put our heads together and work on making it habitable.
You started to talk about your fears and concerns regarding the future of cities. What are the three biggest fears or concerns?
The manipulation of the heavier forces that are definitely out there. If you turn a blind eye to them, then I don't think you're really awake. You don't really know where you are. So the manipulation of the forces is very big. That's one. And then two, it's the health. And we can talk about physical health, which is then the air. Why, come on, we can create more either electrical or non-electrical cars or less cars, name it. We've been working on that for a long time, and carpooling and trains. Come on, we don't need to have all these cars. It just depends on how fast the economy and politicians then therefore can drive it that way. So the second one is then physical health, because I remember living in Brisbane and I would have my windows open most of the time at night, and I like fresh air. But then at the next morning on my desk, you know, I had a white desk and I'd wipe it. My fingers were black. That is because of dust and diesel fumes. And we all know that the statistics say that air pollution is actually a very big killer in big cities. So the second is then that. And then we come to architecture and layout and the health of buildings. If I think about it, going into a big city and staying in a hotel or not like five-star accommodation, then you hear the air conditioning zooming all night. Things feel a bit electric. That's kind of my memory. Things change if the weather changes. If it rains a lot, then it is a different story. Then, or if it snows, for example, in snow areas, or it's super hot. If you've been in Melbourne, it's super hot in Melbourne, in the city. It's kind of not comfortable, is it? You want to go to the river to get some fresh air. You get all that busyness and then all the fumes. And
you mentioned solutions for the physical health, and you mentioned differentiation of health of buildings. How do you think could we solve the manipulation part?
Oh, that's a big one. So it depends on where you are, where you stand in your thoughts on how the world is run. If you don't really look around yourself and you don't see that there's anything is all cool, then I think you're not really looking very well. You're not really sensing into what really the options are for you if you're in trouble and so on, and who tells you what to do. And for instance, like, why do we have to pay to go to a gym? We just want to be fit and healthy and breathing, exercise, sweat, good blood flow, because we sit behind computers. So that's all right. We've got to pay for them. Okay, that's one thing. And why is it so hard to get more parks? So the mental health and manipulation, yeah, I reckon the city design is a very important one too. If you could design cities better, then it would be cool.
Would this manipulation be enlightened if people would be more empowered in their own life, in their own decisions about their own life?
Yeah, I reckon, really, to be blunt, it's like the whole political system should be really rehauled and changed. It should be for the people. We've got all this power. We've got all this knowledge. Good knowledge sometimes gets mangled and killed. Why? Because the people want to stay in power and that they want to be rulers. You know, we all talk about this, you know, free energy and all that stuff. It's all out there, but then apparently not. And then the other thing, so manipulation. Why do we, this is then more a bigger scale, but why do we still support the consumption of poisonous foods? You go, it's not poisonous. Well, hold on. What is good that is in PepsiCo in a Coca-Cola? So you tell me, is there anything good in there for you? No, people need to relax. They need, well, hold on. It's just what habit people have. The more sugar you give them, the more sugar they want. And, you know, being overweight and all that stuff. And that is manipulation. If a government looks after you, then they go like, we're not selling this. We want a healthy country. We want people to not be addicted to particular things that are not good for them. We want people to thrive. Why are our old nation people, why are they all in trouble? Why do they have to fight and that they're stuck up there and they're pumped full of sugar and or alcohol? So, you know, why is that still happening? If there's a good government that's like a good parents that look after you, they wouldn't do that.
Is the government's job to look after the individual?
No, because already the name government is a wrong name for the whole lot. If you look at the word government, it's like a terror. So what kind of terror do you want? I said, I don't want terror. No, but what's the best terror? There is no good terror. Terror is terror. Government should not be ruling. It should be, and it can be, a communal, natural way to live together. They're out there. It's not like all airy-fairy talk. No, but not with the powers that are at the moment. So therefore, I think a change would be good. And I think we're going towards that. And I think a lot of people realize that with all this mandate stuff and masks, injections and name it, all these choices that people suddenly have to make, I think people, other people realize that, hold on, I'm not really sure if this actually is absolutely needed. There's a lot of people that say it's not. So hold on, let me just study this. And I can't study this. Why not? Well, because it's blocked away from the media. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So who's in control here? You know, stuff like that. The realization that our life is, we live in a particular bizarre time where the people that govern over us or try to govern over us tell us that they are governing over us because we all have free will. But things will change. What is your thought on it, Fanny?
I'm currently reading a book titled Sovereign Individual, and it's talking about how we are at the point of turning from the industrial age towards the information age, and how the power shifts from centralized governments to the sovereign individuals. So it talks about how more distributed the knowledge, the money, the wealth, the health, and the control is in the next phase, if their predictions are correct. I'm not saying that this will happen. I'm just saying that it's a really, really interesting concept. I totally believe that we could create a better system with more involvement of the people. So creating cities or the future of our existing cities with the people, with their citizenry, because people are experts of their own living conditions, their own lives, basically. But I think that we are not really using that knowledge to create the better future for our cities. And that's a bit sad, I think.
Yeah, I think we've also lost the touch of quite a few things. The way I feel is that it's kind of part of the plan to kind of be molded in a particular way, which to me is scary. If we really care about everyone else, we should not allow country to have a social crediting system where you get punished if you're not cool or you're not behaving according to the rules immediately. And that is through technology, through our facial recognition and so on. You know what I'm talking about. But we do tolerate it of our neighbors. They're just over there. You fly and then come to the country where this happens. It's part of a particular plan that these planners try to get through. But the human spirit is based on love and care. That's the bottom of everything. Without love and care, there's nothing left. There's none. Money and wealth, they are just for the material things by themselves. Like the house can be happy with the car. That's great. Let them do their thing. But if the people are not there to actually have care between each other, then in my opinion, they will last and they will rule, they will win. And it will be the core of the new life coming up.
Which brings us to the next question. What are the three biggest opportunities for the future of cities?
I reckon is to reevaluate its values and use them to the maximum. And with that, I mean, all right, there's a lot of rooftops we can, and we already know this, and this is happening. We can put bees up there. We can put flowers up there. We can plants up there. It's more green. Bees will pollinate flowers and vegetables, maybe. There's a lot of buildings that are empty. Why are they empty? Because the investor, people don't want to be in that office building anymore. It's old or whatever. It's not well built. It's got cancer in the concrete. Okay, well, reevaluate, fix it up. Some people live in very small spaces. It's not really healthy. Give them more space. Is that possible? So the opportunity is in reevaluating, seeing, okay, what do we really need? Maybe we can make the best out of it, what we already have. That would be my first thought. And the second one is, I reckon, give the opportunity to people to be as healthy as possible. Not sure what's the best opportunity. And then when it comes down to growing or rebuilding, built with sustainable material that actually lasts. Yeah, look at this impact. And I work with Hempbox, but that's a carbon sink and filters the air. And somewhere else in the fields, the air is rejuvenated through the plants and then stored into the plant. And while it's carbonating, it still stores it and slowly expels its goodness. So introduce more of those products, like straw. And well, if you could do a lot of timber, that's cool. But in the end, I don't think it's really a solution to do something both. You'd have to work on a different material. Hemp is a fantastic, fast-growing crop that has many uses. We only use the wood of the hemp. There's still the fiber. If you talk about rebuilding, build it with better materials and plan ahead so that if things have to change, that you then can recycle them or melt them down. And glass is very hard, glass from buildings. Mm-hmm. You can't really recycle it very well. I'm not a specialist on that, I have to say, but I know that it's a different story recycling that glass. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can find a solution for that.
And then what are the three biggest strengths regarding the future of cities?
Well, if you look at my idea, where people are happy and people are stuck in there, and it's a hub of culture and a place where things can happen because they're harder to establish in smaller cities, that'd be great if that would happen. So be more cultural and be a very accessible hub for knowledge and entertainment and health and so on. That would be a good strength. The other one is perhaps there the new sustainable technologies can find its way quicker and be implemented at a bigger scale. So use them a lot over there, because that would be fantastic. If you get a lot of people together that are all happy, then the vibe is happy, and then people will think happy and positive. So you create a very positive, nice space where people can absolutely relax and chill out and work out stuff that they have to work out, and just become a better human, instead of a place where it's all stressful and they have to work and there's times that people have to work and everyone goes in the train at the same time and out of the train at the same time, home at the same time, you know. So the strength, the group of people and buildings all together, is to create something really positive. Then again, it needs to change.
What is your role in establishing the better future of cities to help this change happen?
Well, my role is, with my modest mind and spirit, to establish the use of this sustainable product and make it a very fast and vast material to use, easy and simple and easily accessible, always becoming better. We'll always renew and make it better. Like, things are improving all the time. So my role is to help make this more popular, get more people involved, get people to grow, have a purpose to grow this, because we require people to grow hemp. And that means that the hemp industry can then find its full life again. And it had a full life, or even better now this time. Industrial hemp has been grown for years. It's been one of the first plants to be grown way back. This building product, to bring it to the market and make sure that everyone can use it and do a good job.
I read on your website that the hemp plant itself can give seeds for food. The leaves can be used for fabric. And you are using the stems, the wood, for your hemp blocks.
If I have a little bit here, I have to correct you with the leaves. So, So the plant has a stem, it's got seeds, depending on the type, and if it's male or female, and so on. And then it's got leaves. So there's a technology out there that can strip the leaves off, just like I do with my fingers. I strip the leaves off before harvesting. And those leaves can then be dried and pulverized and put into pellets, little pills, so to speak, long pills, and they can be fed to animals. Well, in this country here, it is illegal to do that. So not in every country. So anyway, that's one thing he could do with the leaves. Then like a celery, you know, there's all these strains on the outside, or like a rhubarb. The fibers are actually on the outside of the plant. This is like a woolly type thing when that is decorticated, because it's like a cord or like a rope. So the rope is taken off and this is then scrunched up. So these fibers then are used indeed for fabrics, insulation. They're used on a big scale in car parts. You sit in the car, you look at the ceiling, that's all reinforced, most likely with hemp or kamut fibers. Mm-hmm. The dashboard, it has a reinforcing in it. In the wall panels, they're made out of a plastic reinforced with fibers. And then the wood, which is this stuff here, are just little bits of, we call it wood, and they're particular size. There's conditions on to use it. But anyway, we put them together and we make them our hempcrete, which then we mix with a lime or lime-type cement, which is not cement. The difference between lime and cement is that lime is heated half of the heat than cement. Cement is generally very dense and doesn't breathe anymore, and it cracks easier than lime. Lime is more flexible and still open. Molecular structure is still open. So yeah, we mix it with lime and then we create this block. It's not easy to create a block because hemp is very stubborn. It wants to bounce back. So people work very hard to create this particular product with lots of technologies. And there you go. So hemp is very useful. And then where it's grown, where it has been grown, that soil is then rejuvenated because the roots have a particular system that rejuvenates the soil. So the Japanese, they have some buildings made out of hempcrete. In France, there's a very old bridge made out of hempcrete. And I'm sure that they used hempcrete type thing in Egypt and Greece and all Romans and all that jazz.
It's a very old technique which tries to be popular again.
Yeah, we try to revitalize it.
That's amazing. And I imagine that this is still a very new solution. I mean, for general people, this could seem a very new solution, even though there is this history behind it. What is the most difficult to apply this solution to the world?
The general gist of accepting new things in some cultures is more difficult than other cultures. In Europe, if you can prove what you're doing and you do it well, then people will quicker adapt to it. In Australia, they are a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. Even Hebel is an invention of aerated concrete, so to speak, aerated cement. It's very lightweight and so on. It kind of works okay, but doesn't really have the same properties. But that was, even though they pumped a lot of money into getting that on the market, it had a very slow uptake. You can come with something really great, but it might still take a long time. The biggest difficulty is the adaptation of the builder and the owner. That then indirectly comes down to, why aren't we producing it here in the country? So I have tried three years ago. So it's 5 years ago, I wanted to produce this product, this block or SIP, structural insulated panel, on the market. And I already had a lot of experience doing hempcrete, and I stepped away from hempcrete into a prefabricated manufactured product. 3 years later, I didn't get anywhere. So I had to go to Europe and find people to collaborate with me, or I collaborate with them. It's fantastic. So we got that going, and now we're, without any advertising and all very minimal advertising, a bit of Facebook and the standard social media, we're really very busy, and then lead into eventually manufacturing here because we've created a market.
And what is the best thing about creating this hempcrete and hemp block for you? Why do you enjoy it?
I enjoy because I'm working on a product that only gets better and faster, and I'm creative with a building product that benefits people. I know someone that invented something that is sweet and different and new. It's fantastic. It's very funny, but it doesn't really make someone really better because it's basically made of sugar. So people live in my buildings. People spend a lot of time in the building, and it's nice if they have a nice feel, if they're healthy, and if they filter the air and give a good vibe in. You'll see, hopefully you come to one of our buildings sooner or later, or if there's something nearby where you are, because then you can experience that there's a difference of being in a hempcrete building to a standard building. It feels different. It's nice to create that, and it's nice to work on in an industry that is positive, really very positive. Carbon-wise, it can empower people, which is actually happening, that people now go to indigenous communities and say, guys, we have an opportunity to make money, create work, be busy and do something positive by growing this thing, this plant, and then making this particular product out of it. And that's only one part, the wood, two-thirds. This is the other third, roughly. That's worth a lot of money. So, hey, we've now created an industry. So I'm happy to be part of, with my little bit, be part of that and try to make that work that on a global level.
Johan, thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your answers. Do you have any closing comments or requests for the audience?
Have a look around and study the hemp building by itself. Check out how comfortable and how nice it is in these buildings, and look it up as an option to build with. We're working here in the United States, in Canada, and looking at South Africa and other countries. So you can grow it and then you can live in it. It's, I reckon it's fantastic.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Johan.
No worries. Well, thank you too.
It was really interesting to hear from Johan the many uses of hemp and opportunities presented by the hempcrete idea, not to mention his views on urban revitalization and re-evaluation. You can find out more about Johan online. All the links are in the show notes. What was the most interesting part for you? What questions did arise regarding Johan's approach to the future of cities? What have you learned from this interview? Let me know on Twitter at WTF4Cities or on the website where the transcripts and show notes are available. Additionally, I will highly appreciate if you consider subscribing. I hope this was an interesting interview for you as well, and thanks for tuning in.
What is the future for cities podcast?